Blog Talk Radio.
Los Angeles, California. 465 square miles of constantly interfacing humanity, representing every race, color, creed, and persuasion. But God, no matter how he is worshipped, chose in his infinite wisdom to deposit here in the cultural nexus of the Pacific Rim. Almost 4 million people work and play here, and like any other place, anywhere, there are those who have it, and those who want it. Those who have it, enjoy it, no matter how they got it. Those who want it can get it by attempting to better themselves in a sympathetic community populated by decent citizens cheering them on. Or they can try to take it the easy way. Because even in the City of Angels, from time to time, some halos slip. That's where I come in, doing my job to the best of my ability on a daily basis. I work here. I carry a badge.
Discussing Marjorie Taylor Greene, Donald Trump, and televangelists. How these televangelists love sucking people dry out of their money. Plus, there has been a huge win for the Democratic Party. What does this mean for the Republicans? Well, if anybody knows how it works, well, the Republicans are really showing that they're going off the rails. And because of that, now more than ever, people are flipping to the Democratic Party. Wisconsin actually turned their Supreme Court into the Democrats because they wanted a change for America, a change for Wisconsin. And believe it or not, this is what's crazy, but it's been 15 years since they've had a Democratic Supreme Court like that. So the Democrats won there. The mayor of Chicago was a Democrat who won in Chicago. Yeah, there was a sweeping Democratic win across the United States last night. While Donald Trump decided to come out and boast about how Republicans are doing such a great job and how we want to take back America. Well, America spoke up and said, sorry, Trump, we're going Democrat. And this is the prelude to what's going to happen for 2024 election. A Democratic sweep is coming. And it's just beautiful. It is beautiful, ladies and gentlemen, that people are not taking the shit off the Republicans anymore, that they're tired of Donald Trump and his bullshit failed policies. When Donald Trump fucked up America, people said, we're done. And that's why it was a huge win for the Democrats.
Some major, major news in what's widely understood to be the most important election of 2023. The liberal candidate, Judge Janet Protasiewicz, has won the Wisconsin Supreme Court election, defeating the MAGA Alliance candidate, Dan Kelly. This means that the Wisconsin Supreme Court has flipped from 4-3 conservative to 4-3 liberal, giving liberals the majority. And it's really hard to overstate the absolute magnitude of this victory for Democrats, not just for Wisconsin, but for the entire country. Here's why. The court could end up deciding whether Trump succeeds in sealing the 2024 election. It can now undo an 1849 law that bans the right to an abortion, something that Janet Protasiewicz is clearly intent on overturning. It can protect the rights of workers, roll back the worst gerrymander in the country, and even revive Wisconsin's democracy after years of right-wing attacks. So when I say that the consequences of this win are monumental, I absolutely mean it. Consider this. Democrats won 53% of the vote in the Wisconsin State Assembly elections in 2018. Republicans only won 44.6%, but Democrats only got 36 seats while Republicans got 63 seats due to Republican gerrymandering. In fact, Democratic candidates have won 14 of the last 17 statewide elections in Wisconsin, but the Republican Party still controls 67% of the seats in the state Senate and 65% in the Assembly. That's not democracy. That is a rigged system. But with Janet Protasiewicz's win, they now have the power to bring these gerrymandered maps in front of the court and restore fairness to elections. Republicans have been banking on this structural disenfranchisement for years now to hold on to power in Wisconsin. Here's what Justice-elect Janet Protasiewicz said about restoring democracy and fair maps when I asked her about the issue.
So, you know, Wisconsin's a battleground state. We have very, very close statewide elections. Our governor, Governor Evers, won re-election by about 3%. But we elected on that same ballot a Republican United States Senator. We elected a Democrat as an Attorney General. We elected a Republican for our state treasurer. So it tells you that we have these very, very close elections. We're a battleground state. But then you take a look at our legislature, and virtually two-thirds of the seats in both the House and the Senate are red. And you say to yourself, how can that possibly be fair? And then you look at the fact that we have 8 congressional seats. We have a delegation of 8. 6 of our seats are red and 2 are blue. So you know the numbers are askew. You know our legislature doesn't get anything done. When you have these very, very non-competitive seats, you know, it certainly engenders more and more partisanship. There's no need to work across the aisle. There's no need to compromise. So I would argue that what's happening with these gerrymandered seats is really a threat to our democracy.
And in fact, building on that, far from engendering any type of bipartisanship. This is actually facilitating more extremism, because those are the only people now, because those districts are already preordained in terms of who the elected officials are going to be. You're just really trying to win a primary at that point and not trying to come together at the end of it.
And so here's the situation. I think that if the court elects a new Supreme Court justice on April 4th, whose name might be Judge Janik, I would be certainly very, very open to revisiting the maps. You know, I've got to be careful, you know, what I say about, you know, particular types of issues. Obviously, every decision has to be rooted in the law, and I have to be fair and impartial. But one of the main reasons I got into this race is because of the threat to our democracy, the utter threat that our very gerrymandered maps have, right, and people's ability to vote and have their vote counted.
It could not be clearer than that. And as I mentioned, there's an abortion ban from 1849 that's currently in effect in Wisconsin since Roe v. Wade was overturned. Here's what Justice-elect Protasiewicz said when I asked her about this issue.
My personal view is that women should have a right to make their own reproductive health decisions without the interference of the government.
We hear about this 1849 abortion ban in the state of Wisconsin. Is that in effect in the state right now?
It's in effect right now, and I'm going to tell you what's really interesting about that. You know, women cannot get an abortion in the state of Wisconsin right now, no matter what the circumstances are. But I had a meet and greet with a number of OBGYNs a couple weeks ago. And what they said to me was very, very interesting. They said it's not just these issues that the women who need a medical procedure have that's, you know, coming before, you know, that's concerning people. They were telling me doctors don't want to practice medicine in the state of Wisconsin. They don't feel as though they can adequately, you know, treat their patients. And one physician actually said to me, besides the physician attrition issue that she's concerned about, she said, you know, my daughter lives in a state where you can get an abortion. She's planning to get married and raise a family. She wanted to move back to the state of Wisconsin. She's not coming back to Wisconsin anymore. And the reason she's not coming back is she's concerned she can't have the medical care that she might need in the event that something would go wrong with the pregnancy.
Because of this victory, Wisconsin will now have a Supreme Court that will protect and uphold their reproductive rights. If a case comes to the court, women will likely soon have the right to control their own bodies restored. And all of this happened because people got out and voted. To give you an idea, here's what the line looked like at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire.
Thank you for voting. Thank you for voting. Thank you for voting.
A sentence I never thought I'd say.
All right, so there you go. Interesting enough, Democrats won in Wisconsin. Now they got a Democratic Supreme Court, which will help with women's productive rights, by the way. So probably what we're going to see happen is they're going to overturn the abortion ban in Wisconsin. I think that's going to be awesome. It's going to be great, because that's what needs to be done. So I'm really excited that the Democrats won the Supreme Court in Wisconsin, which, by the way, again, the last time that ever happened was 15 years ago. So that tells you this is a historical win for the Democrats. All right, so let's move on. So as we know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the most idiotic woman of all, that is now the face of the Republican Party, and she has been doing so much dumb shit. For example, she went and decided to rally the MAGA supporters outside of New York, or inside of New York, or outside of the courthouse where Donald Trump was indicted and arrested yesterday. And so she thought she was going to do something really smart, so she got on a megaphone, started talking about, let's praise Trump, let's do this. When in doubt, what happened is that the anti-Trumpers were so loud they drowned out Marjorie Taylor Greene. So within just a few minutes of Marjorie Taylor Greene spouting off her stupid shit out of the megaphone and being overran by the Democrats or non-Trumpers, she got in her car and left New York. This was a way for New Yorkers to tell Marjorie Taylor Greene she was not welcome and to get her hillbilly ass back to her state because she's not welcome in New York. And, of course, Donald Trump, with his arrest, which was a major, major historical event that happened, because Donald Trump is the first ex-president to be cited and charged and arrested for a crime that he committed, crimes that he committed, that all has to do with business dealings, fraudulent pays that he paid from his personal account and the Trump Organization account, which were checks given to Michael Cohen, his former lawyer, and these checks were directed from Donald Trump. And so Donald Trump has a really shady paper trail that all points back to Donald Trump. No courthouse or prosecutor is going to have somebody arrested unless they have hard physical evidence and enough proof to convict a person of a crime. That's what happened with Donald Trump. They know that they have enough evidence to convict him, and that's why they had him arrested yesterday, because they know he has 34 counts of felonies against him. This could be a serious situation for Donald Trump, which it will be. So Donald Trump is a gag order, by the way, taking place. And with the gag order, what did Donald Trump do? Well, he took to his supporters and he came out at Mar-a-Lago complaining about the Democrats, complaining about Joe Biden and his failed situation with his documents, and lies upon lies upon lies. Everything that Donald Trump said at that rally was fact-checked by independent fact-checkers, by the way. And they fact-checked it so much that every word pretty much coming out of Donald's mouth was a lie. And they proved it. If you would like to check out those fact checkers, or you would like to find out what they found, give me shoot me an email, and I will send you the link and, you know, what they found. The link, by the way, you can find this on any news source, but you can email me at jerrywilliamslive@gmail.com. That's jerrywilliamslive@gmail.com. I will send you the link, multiple links of all these fact checkers. It blows my mind that Donald Trump is that stupid to where they put a gag order on him saying, don't talk about the case. And what does Don do? Well, Don thinks he's above the law. And you're not above the law when you're a criminal. So Donald Trump has to pay the price. And I know the MAGA people out there are hard broken. Their hearts are broken. They're feeling sad because Donald Trump was arrested. I totally get it. And if it was a Democrat that did it, if it was Joe Biden, Barack Obama, I ain't going to lie. I would be very upset. And I would actually have to say that they have to pay the price. But it's not them. It is Donald Trump who broke the law. So when somebody is a criminal and they break the law, coming from me, I'm a former police officer, the first thing to do is to deflect your crimes to blame other people. That's what Donald Trump is doing. He is deflecting the issue that he broke the law, and he has all these criminal accounts that he has against him. And he's saying, well, let me go blame somebody else. So he blames Joe Biden. He blames the Democrats. He blames the prosecuting attorney. These are the tactics of someone who is dangerous as a criminal. This is somebody who is a fascist, a dictator, who believes he can get away with anything that is thrown at him that is a crime that he has committed. Thinks he's above the law because he believes that he doesn't believe in the American judicial system. He doesn't believe in the Constitution. He has no feelings or beliefs of our Constitution in the United States. So what does Donald do? He skirts the law to get away with it. But Don, guess what, buddy? You have been caught with your hand in Stormy Daniels' pants. And you've been caught with paying the price of money from your campaign and your bank accounts to Stormy Daniels for hush money to hide the evidence so you would not look bad in 2016 when you were running against Hillary Clinton. Because, God forbid, that they had just released, by the way, when you made that payment to Stormy Daniels, you did that because just a couple months earlier, they released the Hollywood Access tape of you talking about grabbing pussy. And when you talked about grabbing girls' pussies and preying upon them, then you thought, uh-oh, I got in trouble. So let's bribe Stormy Daniels for some hush money because I don't need anything else on my campaign. Well, unfortunately, when you went against Stormy Daniels, that was one pussy that bit back, and now you're paying the price. So Donald Trump has this woman that is Marjorie Taylor Greene, the nastiest woman I've ever seen. I mean, she's so nasty that her husband divorced her ass. And, you know, he doesn't want anything to do with her because she's just so nasty. And the only person that would actually put his orange dick in her would be Donald Trump. So here's what Marjorie Taylor Greene did. She came out and said, well, I'm just so smart and I'm brilliant and I'm going to go on 60 Minutes to show them I know what I'm talking about. So she went on 60 Minutes the other day. And all that happened is that they interviewed her and they realized how much of a dumbass she truly is and how she makes the Republicans look even more dumb than they already are. Here is what happened.
Let's talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene on 60 Minutes. Dozens of you wrote to me. As many people wrote to me as the number that protested for Trump at Mar-a-Lago. Dozens. Dozens of you wrote to me and said, David, what is your take about 60 Minutes interviewing Marjorie Taylor Greene? They are platforming a lunatic. They are pretending as though they're normalizing the idea of Marjorie Taylor Greene as someone who should be in government. It's just a matter of do we agree about her views rather than making her out to be the dangerous extremist who has no business in a position of power. I tweeted yesterday, I understand the concerns and I want to see the interview first. And the reason I said I want to see the interview first is I've long advocated for something called responsible platforming. And by responsible platforming, I mean it's not about who you interview, it's how you interview them. And so, for example, when I have someone on the show who is explaining nuclear fission to us as a subject matter expert, I handle that interview differently than when I interviewed, for example, a white nationalist neo-Nazi Richard Spencer. If I'm going to have Richard Spencer on, I need to be prepared to make sure that my audience understands his extremist ideas are dangerous, that they're bogus, and so on and so forth. I think people get this. The point is the interview's appropriateness is evaluated based on how the interview is handled. And it wasn't handled the best by Leslie Stahl, but it wasn't the end of the world. Overall, I don't like that I think the interview did normalize Marjorie Taylor Greene to a degree. That's where I come down. It wasn't overall a softball interview, but there were moments that weren't so good. Let's look at just a couple of moments. Here's one question about whether Marjorie Taylor Greene has deliberately styled herself after Donald Trump.
How much have you styled yourself?
And why don't we have audio here? I'm not sure. We do have audio. My headphone has become unplugged. Let me plug that back in. Beautiful. All right, let's take it from the top.
How much have you styled yourself after Donald Trump? People say.
And by the way, this look from Marjorie Taylor Greene, one thing I want to say, and I won't harp on it, is Greene's attitude the entire interview was sort of like, this isn't a serious show. Leslie Stahl isn't serious, and I'm above this. This is just me placating the fake news. And it was pretty disgusting, but let's not harp on that.
That you are Trump in high heels.
I didn't intentionally style myself after President Trump, but I can see how people draw those similarities. We both come from the same industry, construction. I also have pretty much a plain speaking style.
Yeah.
And so does he.
Okay. So a little bit fluffy, a little bit fluffy. One of the better moments was when Leslie Stahl was prepared with fact checks and tweets and everything to question Marjorie Taylor Greene about things she had previously said, including that the Parkland shooting was a false flag and other things. Marjorie Taylor Greene basically just denies it. But I do think this was one of the stronger parts of the interview. Let's take a look.
Shortly after she arrived in Washington, the Democratic-led House ousted her from her committees because of her past endorsement of violence against some Democratic leaders and her history of embracing QAnon that she explained in a speech on the House floor.
I stumbled across something, and this was at the end of 2017, called QAnon.
Right.
I was allowed to believe things that weren't true, and that is absolutely what I regret. Well, I apologize to my colleagues. I think apologies are important.
Okay, did you ever apologize to Nancy Pelosi about the bullet to her head?
I didn't say that, so I don't need to apologize for words that weren't mine.
Didn't you like it?
Other people also ran my social media.
So now it's like, listen, the party of personal responsibility, that was other people. Well, if other people liked something about Nancy Pelosi needs a bullet to the head and you don't agree with it, shouldn't you loudly denounce the sentiment? Oh, no, other people run my social media.
I don't think I did that.
Are you saying that you don't stand by what's on your social media?
Well, of course I stand for what's on my social media, but at times you're not always in control. We have all kinds of people that work on our...
So it's not your fault. Oh, okay. Got it. Well, great responsibility, huh?
Social media.
Did you apologize for your position on Parkland, Florida?
What was my position on Parkland, Florida?
That it was a false flag.
I don't know
flag.
If you actually have my position. No, I never said Parkland was a false
flag.
Okay, so there's a post. It's called a payoff to keep his mouth shut since it was a false flag planned shooting, to which Marjorie Taylor Greene responded, exactly.
Oh, I've never said that. School shootings are horrible. I don't think it's anything to joke about.
We fact-checked before I got to this interview.
Have you fact-checked all my statements from kindergarten through 12th grade?
Okay, that's called a red herring, not at issue. She's denying having said things that are on the record.
In college, and as I've paid my taxes and never broken a law, and I got a few speeding tickets. Do we need to...
Remember, it doesn't have anything to do with breaking the law. It's she's denying having said things that she said. This is how you try to distract.
Talk about those two, because I think where you're going down is the same attacks that people have attacked me with over and over and over.
She means holding me accountable for things I've said.
Well, if this is what you're known for, I think it's good that you're responding to the charges.
I think it's a legitimate thing for us to constantly focus on it, but never focus on anything good about me.
There is nothing good. That's the problem. I mean, it's a sad thing, but she's done nothing good since coming to Congress. She's only had this path of destruction where she harasses the victims of school shootings, spreads conspiracy theories, spreads medical disinformation. And then she's never held accountable for it. So this is an attempt to ask her about the things she's done, which are basically saying horrible things.
Let me button this up and we'll move on. You want to bring the Republican Party closer to your views. You want to bring the country closer to your views. You've said that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here are some of the things you've said. That America should have a Christian government, that abortion should be banned nationally, that you want to defund the FBI. Yes. You want immigration to stop for 4 years. You've said those things, correct?
Yeah, these are some of my views.
The Constitution, the very First Amendment, prohibits having a religion in the government.
Yet the Founding Fathers quoted the Bible constantly and were driven by their faith.
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
That's a total cop-out, by the way.
As a fervent supporter of the now-indicted Donald Trump, she was a featured speaker at his rally in Waco last weekend. While she's adored here, the latest national poll has her approval rating at just 29%.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, you happen to be here. Would you like to run for the Senate? No, we'll fight like hell for you, I tell you.
The question for her and the country is, can she expand her brash MTG brand beyond the right-wing populist base?
I believe the answer is obviously not. So listen, some fact-checking there, certainly. Marjorie Taylor Greene is a narcissist, much like Trump, and so you never really get her, because no matter how you push her, eventually she'll say she's being misquoted, or you don't understand, or she's actually correct, or whatever the case may be. One other moment I do want to show you from this interview, and I would watch the whole thing if you really want to understand the full scope of it. She said, actually, the government, the U.S. government really isn't worthy of much respect and deserves to be attacked.
But also, he's often in attack mode, and you appear to be.
Yes, I think our government deserves it. They don't really deserve to be respected that much.
Right. And of course, the government that doesn't deserve much respect and deserves to be attacked is the one that she works in and makes $175,000 a year for doing, and is paid through the taxpayer funded salaries of everyone that is in her position. But it's an entity that should be attacked and blah, 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 blah. So overall, this interview was an atrocity. It was more an atrocity because of the things that Marjorie Taylor Greene said. I don't think that there's – some of you came away from this saying this was a total puff piece and it's horrible what Leslie Stahl did. Others came away saying it's amazing how Marjorie Taylor Greene was held accountable by Leslie Stahl. I think that there were some really good attempts to hold her accountable. She's really slippery, like Trump is slippery. And her base.
There you go. So Marjorie Taylor Greene, the woman who is part of the Trump train, obviously, went on to 60 Minutes and, of course, looked like a dumbass. And, you know, people realized, anybody who watched that interview with her, I'm sure that they realized within just a few moments how much Marjorie Taylor Greene is a danger for the Republican Party. And people are allowing her to talk. But see, that's what's going on with this stupid Republican Party anyway. You have all these different Republicans going rogue, going to the press, anybody that will pay attention to them, and getting on television just to show their face. And what they're doing is they're making their party look even more weak than before. So Marjorie Taylor Greene, prime example. She went up to New York, got her ass booed and kicked out of New York by anti-Trump supporters, and she left back to her state. And so, you know, they told her, they said, get your hillbilly ass out of here. And, of course, they played those banjos, as she left into her vehicle and was whisked away back to her state. Sorry, Marjorie. people don't like you. And New York will not allow you to come up to their state and put some stupid bullshit out there against the American people. It's just not going to happen. So Marjorie Taylor Greene has to pay that price. What happened? She had to be kicked out, and then it is something that she's going to pay the price for. So that's what it is. It is ridiculous to think of that, but this is what the Republican Party is. They're a failed party, and all they're doing is digging deeper and deeper into the hole to where they are falling apart. Is it going to get better for them? Absolutely not. The only thing that they can do is to fail even worse. Yeah, it's a bad, bad situation for them. It is really a bad situation for them. And the Republicans are going to fail. Donald Trump, who thinks that he's going to be the next president, again, is not going to happen. You have Ron DeSantis, who thinks he's going to be the next president. And you have America. America voted against Donald Trump in the last election because they didn't want four more years of the stupid, crazy bullshit. So that's what it boils down to. Republicans are failing miserably, and it's getting worse. And that's why you've seen a Democratic win in Wisconsin against for the Supreme Court. And you've seen Democrats win across the United States last night. And that is why in the last major election where we had senators and governors, and you've seen Democrats winning the Senate. Of course, yeah, the Republicans flipped the House, but it wasn't a major victory that they thought they were going to have. So it just proves how terrible this truly is, how terrible it truly is for them. Okay, now I want to get into something else. I'm going to switch gears, and we're going to talk about televangelists. Now, a lot of you probably have seen these televangelists on television. They always beg you for their money or for your money. They always prey upon it. They say, "Well, I'm going to ask you for money. Please give it to me. Please, please, please. Take it from your college funds. Take it from your kids. Take it from your bank accounts." They don't give a shit what happens to you as long as you give them money. And what they do is they use the Bible as a weapon for their greed. These televangelists like Kenneth Copeland, you have these guys, you have Jesse Duplantis, you have TJ Lakes, whatever his name is, Jakes, you have Benihana, Benny Hinn, Joel Osteen, all these guys and girls, by the way, there's girl ministers that do this, who make over millions of dollars a year as a salary, flying on private jets, and banking off the American, off the people that send them money. And it's terrible that this shit is happening. And I think to myself, why did anybody want to give them money? It's really ridiculous that people will give these people money and think that it's okay to do that. There's no reason for you to give them money. I mean, they're going to tell you the more that you send them money, the more money you send, the better your prayer will be, because they're desperate for your money. And if you send them money, you are sending them lies. You're sending them money to fuel their lies. They are not using the money for good purposes to help others. They're actually using the money for themselves. That's why they drive Lamborghinis. I mean, look at Joel Osteen's Lamborghini setup, man. That man has more Lamborghinis than any other person I've ever seen that's a minister. It's really getting ridiculous. Do you really truly think that Jesus, back in the day, when he would hang around with the poor people and he would sit among them and he would preach the gospel, his word, his father's inspired words, and he would be out on like Mount Olive or wherever, and he would be praying and preaching, that he would actually say, you have to send me money. Got to put it in this basket before I could do anything. Oh, you want to be healed? You're blind and you want to be healed? Well, you got to give Paul, you know, give him some money first and then I'll heal you. Because the more money you give him, the better I will heal you. You want to pray to my Father? The more money you give us, the more the prayer will be answered. As a matter of fact, Jesus was so upset with it that he actually went into the temple of his fathers in Jerusalem and turned over the money changers and said that this is not going to happen. What belongs to Caesar belongs to Caesar. What belongs to my father belongs to my father, which means the house of worship is no place for money. But what these churches have done, they have taken the money and they have turned it into a business. And look, churches should be taxed. They should be taxed because they want to get involved in the government. They want to get involved in our United States government. They want to tell politicians what to do. They want to tell them this is what's right for them. And the problem I have with it is if they want to get involved in politics in the United States government, then they must pay the price of paying taxes. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute. Okay, just think about that for a minute. They do not pay taxes, and they're making over millions of dollars, and they have to pay no taxes. You go to work, and you pay $30,000, or you make $30,000, or whatever, $60,000, $80,000. You got to pay taxes on that. You got to pay taxes. I got to pay taxes. To be a self-business owner that I am, I got to pay taxes as a small business owner. And because I have to pay taxes, these people don't have to pay taxes. It's not right. It is definitely not right. When they are making more money than any other business that's out there and they pay zero taxes, there's a problem with that. By the way, not only that they do that kind of situation, but let's look at something else. They pay no taxes. They have to worry about nothing like that. They have to, you know, and I got to pay my taxes. When I work, I have to pay taxes. That's what the government wants me to do. And then I think about, well, I'm not making $1 million. I guess if I was a billionaire, I wouldn't have to pay taxes, but that's what they do. And then they embrace themselves around Republicans because Republicans are all about taking care of the wealthy people and giving them better tax breaks. I mean, there's nothing in the Bible that states that you have to truly pay a tithing. And by the way, there is word about tithing, but what they do is ministers take this word tithing and they really use it for the wrong purposes. See, tithing can actually, if you really read the verse of the Bible, I want you to read that scripture, look it up and read it. Because when you read what it really means, it means that you can give something back to the church, right? That could be your time of cleaning the church seats, the cleaning the church in general, helping the church build up something, cutting the lawn for the church, doing something for the church, giving something back is like that. Ministering is giving back to the church. When you see churches out there and they have people out there working the free stores where people donate money to the church, and then they go and they buy food. And then these people come in, these parishioners or workers or church people will donate their time to help distribute that food to the poor. That is tithing to the church. That is tithing to the church. You do not have to give money. It doesn't have to be done. There's no reason to give the money to the church. What these churches have done have taken the verse of the Bible and turned it around into making people believe that they got to pay money. So they take that verse of the Bible of tithing, right? And then they start to prey upon your fears. Like they may say, if you want to be healed, if you want your prayer to be answered, if you're having your prayers are not being answered, well, send me this money and then your prayers will be answered. I'm going to send you something. I'm going to send you a blanket that you wrap yourself up in and then God's going to heal you. Now, I want you to think about that. Does that sound like it's fucking stupid? Absolutely it does. And that's why people are donating to churches to give them money. I mean, these are elderly people who donate all their money that they have out of their, out of their Social Security benefits, retirements. Then you have not only that, but you got people that are donating money from their kids' scholarship funds and school funds. People who are very poor that can't even buy a loaf of bread, and they're giving this money to these scam artists. These scam artists are no different than Donald Trump, by the way. They're all con men. They are snake oil salesmen. They are wolves in sheep clothes trying to steal your money and say that they're Christians. A true Christian minister will not beg you all the time for money. They will preach to you and help you more than they will ask for money. When a church asks you for money, it's time to get the hell away from that church and go to a right church. That's what you do to help make sure that you're going to the right church. If they are for money and that's what their love is about, then you have entered the wrong church. You know what? There is something else that grinds my gears. This is something else that grinds my gears about these church people. And I'm going to tell you, I cannot stand when there are churches out here that will hold a service and then everyone in the congregation is carrying a gun. Why the fuck do you need to carry a gun inside of a church? I know people are saying, well, there's been these church shootings, so let's protect our church. Well, then hire a security officer to be outside the church, right? You should not have to go inside of a place of worship that is true worship of God and worry about being shot and then say, I have to carry a gun. There's no reason for you to carry a gun in a church. The Bible and guns do not go together, because they actually speak against those things. Also, not only that you got people carrying guns in churches, but these are the same idiots that say, well, we got to help protect our people, right? So God wants us to protect our church members. But yet they'll say, if I have COVID-19, if I get COVID-19, okay, if I get COVID-19, I don't have to worry because I go to church and God's going to protect me from COVID-19. So that's why I'm going to church. When COVID was really rampantly, it's still out there, by the way, but when it was really rampantly going out and there was a mask mandate, people were going to church saying, oh, I can go to church because God's going to protect me from the coronavirus. So if God can protect you from the coronavirus, don't you think God's going to protect you from weapons and guns? Well, absolutely. Because if you don't believe that, then you're a disbeliever that God's going to protect you. See, you can't have one and then not the other. So these people with guns in their churches, you are truly not a true church of Jesus Christ. There's no way. I don't think Jesus went and sat out with his people and then put a gun up there and said, let's shoot somebody. Let's make sure we all have weapons. Back in their times, they had like these, you know, like spears, swords, and everything. But I don't think Jesus said, let's put the swords out there and kill somebody. As a matter of fact, the night before Jesus even went to go, and the night before Jesus went, and this is the night before he got turned in, and you remember this when Judas turned him in, and blah, blah, blah. And then he was crucified under Pontius Pilate and so forth. Well, the night before that happened, Jesus was praying in the garden, right? Well, at that time, this is when the soldiers came up to arrest Jesus. And if you remember, I think it was Peter or Paul. I think it was Peter. Peter pulled out a sword and cut one of the guard's ears off. And Jesus healed the ear of the soldier and told Peter and them to put down their swords because Jesus was going to go peacefully. Now, what Jesus was saying is you don't have to have a gun to worship. You don't have to have that sword to worship because I'm about peace. And that's what Jesus said. I'm about peace. That's what you should be preaching and teaching is peace. Not let's have a Bible and have a gun in the other hand. It doesn't work out. It doesn't work. This last audio I'm going to play for the end of the show is about televangelists and the sickening part of the televangelists. This makes me so disgusted, it makes me want to puke. So here is the last part of this audio. Make sure you join us Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Paul and I will be back again, probably around Monday or Tuesday. So we will talk 100% politics. If you ever want me to cover a topic on the show, please email me, jerrywilliamslive@gmail.com. I will cover the topic that you would like me to cover. If you want me to investigate something, let me know, jerrywilliamslive@gmail.com. With that said, I'm going to play this last audio clip, so everybody have a good night. God bless you. And have a beautiful, peaceful...
Is it just me or are televangelists absolutely obsessed with prying money from their congregation members' hands?
You're going to come up to me and hug my neck and kiss me and say, thank you, thank you, thank you for getting that money out of my pocket.
I've been seeing a lot of it lately in brazen, ridiculous ways. So I figured we'd take a look at a little compilation I put together of televangelists shamelessly bragging about prying money from people's hands. Let's get into it.
I tell you, partnership in the gospel is the greatest thing you can do. When we get to heaven, I can guarantee you there's not a single one of you that's going to be saying, I wish you hadn't have encouraged me to give so much and that I'd have got my fifth flat screen TV and that I would have had more jewels and fancier clothes and a nicer car. All that stuff will be gone. It's only what you invest in the kingdom that is going to benefit you for eternity. You're going to come up to me and hug my neck and kiss me and say, thank you, thank you, thank you for getting that money out of my pocket.
Wow, dude, that is what I call shameless. That was Andrew Womack. He's a televangelist, and he's famous for a number of bizarre things, but the one that sticks out the most in my mind is his claim that he prayed mildew away.
You know, real quickly, we need to take questions, but real quickly, when my wife and I first got married, we were poor, and we lived in a house that wasn't insulated. And so we had a gas heater on the inside to keep the place warm, but because there was no insulation, the walls sweat. And in the closets, especially where it was dark and stuff like this, we just had mildew everywhere. And you know what I did? Instead of taking something and cleaning it off and repainting or something, I took Deuteronomy chapter 28 and read it. Mildew, you are accursed. Then I turned over to Galatians 3:13. I'm redeemed from you. And I spoke to mildew and cursed it. And did you know it went away without me having to clean it and do something? It was a curse. And I rebuked the curse. And I got free from that.
Totally. A totally believable claim. No evidence necessary. This dude is actually pretty harmful and regressive. It isn't just wacky claim after wacky claim like that. He has some disturbing and strange ideas on the LGBT community, some of which I can't even play on YouTube. It would be too much. But take a look at this one.
I sent a spy into our public school system to check out what the books are. And I got a list of, I think it was 54 books in the Woodland Park school system. And this is a small place, 7,000 people in the community. And there's 54 homosexual books that we know of. And I got a list of that. And I've got people that are on my staff that go to every school board meeting. And as soon as we get them looked at so that we can defend what we're saying, we're going to stand up in the school board. We also ran, and we now have a number of our Caris graduates that are on school board, and we've got Christians in places, and praise God, we're seeing things change.
So yeah, that's what your grandma's hard-earned money is going to right now. At least the money that isn't going into this guy's pocket. Absolutely shameless. You guys remember Jesse Duplantis? He's a lesser-known televangelist, but he's still extremely influential and extremely rich. He's friends with Kenneth Copeland. A lot of people remember that time Kenneth Copeland said getting on a commercial airplane is like getting in a long tube full of demons. But most people don't know about the guy he was talking to. Check this clip out.
You couldn't have done that on an airliner.
No, sir. No way.
Stand up and say, what'd you say, Lord?
No.
Okay, no, yeah. And the guy sitting over there saying, what the hell does he think he's doing?
You can't do
you
that.
You can't do that. No. That's why we're on that airplane. We can talk to God.
Glory
we
to
can,
God.
We, it's true. You can't manage that today.
Right.
This dope-filled world.
Right.
And get in a long tube with a bunch of demons.
Right. That's exactly the
And thing. It's deadly.
And he works on your heart. It really does.
The guy on the right is Jesse Duplantis. Copeland gets a lot of flack for that clip, and rightfully so. But if you think Copeland is bad, you haven't seen anything yet. Duplantis has his own ministry, and as I mentioned, some of it gets bad. This is Jesse Duplantis telling an absolutely hilarious story at a fundraiser he and Kenneth Copeland were doing together. Check it out.
I honestly believe this, that the reason why Jesus hadn't come is because people are not giving the way God told them to give. You see what I'm saying?
Wow.
I mean, when you understand it, you can speed up the time.
Wow. Can you say emotional manipulation? Evangelicals want nothing more than for Jesus to come back. And this dude's straight up telling them that if they give him their life savings, Jesus will come back. As though Jesus cares how much money you give to this televangelist. Keep watching. It gets worse.
I was on television. He said, I heard you was a millionaire. I said, that's not right. That's not true. He said, yes, it is. I said, no, it's not. Multi. Now, add that to it, and you'll be all right. Oh, he couldn't handle that. He liked to have had a fit. And I said, you mess with me, I'll buy this station, and I'll fire you.
Yeah,
he didn't like that, did he? Didn't. You know, that was a little fleshy, but it felt good. Just did. You know?
Wow, dude. He seems to know that was wrong, but he doesn't care. He says it was a little fleshy, but it felt good. How do people not see straight through this? Honestly, I would recommend covering that up. Pay the dude off to keep quiet about it or whatever. You know why he's out there telling the story like he doesn't even care? Because he doesn't. Did it affect his reputation? Of course not. The types of people who trust and believe the things he says won't leave his side no matter what. The bizarre thing is that what he did is traditionally considered to be one of the biggest scumbag things ever. Like, it's one of those unrealistic scenarios that movie villains do, so you hate the character more. I guess he decided he wanted to see what it was like. Keep watching the clip.
I was a little fleshy, but it felt good.
Yeah, it
just did. You know what I'm not saying? Wrong. So I realized that I will not move people emotionally to give.
Right. No.
I'm going to have people move according to the Word of God. What is God saying to you? And I really believe this. If people would call this number and put this victory all over the world on every available voice, every available outlet, God, the Father, he would say, Jesus, go get them.
Yeah.
Because you see, he wants to see us as much as we want to see him.
If he wants to see us as much as we want to see him, then why isn't he here already? And don't tell me it's because I haven't donated my life savings. God is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-wise. If he really wanted you to have fat stacks, then he could snap his fingers and give them to you. He wouldn't even have to take your grandparents' medicine money out of their checking accounts. But this guy seems to believe that Jesus is waiting to see how much money you donate to Jesse Duplantis. Mind-blowing.
Because, you see, he wants to see us as much as we want to see him. You see what I'm saying? And so what has hindered all these things is,
right,
is because people are not doing in the financial realm, because we live in an economic world, what God's called them to do. You know, he's called us to do that. So I don't have a problem with...